to do that thing. Told you to do that fucking thing. Why didn't you do the fucking thing? It's always you with this fucking thing. You never do the fucking thing. I tell it. Can you believe this? I tell this guy to do the fucking thing, and he don't do the fucking thing.
Hello, and welcome to We Like Funko Pops Only.
I still didn't buy that. I didn't buy that Contra Funko. I didn't buy it. It's still there. They still got like seven of them. There's seven.
They want you to have all seven.
They got seven Lance Bean. Dog, I think I would probably buy them if they had a Bill Reiser, but they've just got seven Lance Beans. That's it. And it would still be a bet, like buying seven Lance Beans would still be a better investment than buying Contra Operation Galuga.
Oh. So I played the demo. This is going to be a tangent. I played the demo to Operation Galuga. I wasn't feeling it. I was like, this feels very placid and flat to me.
It's
I'm not feeling it. And then I saw your review and I was like, yeah, that kind of confirms some things.
Very mobile game core.
Yeah. It's a shame. I honestly just want a re-release of Shattered Soldier.
I want a re-release of Shattered Soldier. I want a re-release of Neo Contra, and I want a re-release of Hardcore Uprising. Also, this is a new Sox cast. You've all been duped. this is the new Sox cast makeup. I hope you're all excited.
Yep, it's about the Funko Pops we don't buy.
Yes.
Unfortunately, I Funko'd it up there.
It's completely down the toilet.
Let's scratch that. Hello, and welcome to We Like Bad Music Only, the podcast with no shame. I must say that I am very excited to kind of be driving this one. This is a second part to a little series that Polly has inspired us to make, and that is about picking an album that would surprise our co-hosts, would maybe shock our co-hosts or our listeners, or maybe it's an album that is out of our wheelhouse. And the album I picked was Mandy Moore's Amanda Lee, which I feel is a little bit of both. So I'm really excited to talk about it with my co-host today. And to get started, I'd like to introduce them. On my virtual right, if they aren't searching the earth for the most sludgiest and doomiest of metal guitar tones, you'll find them training as a cavalier for the ninth house. It's Garden.
Howdy. I mean, no offense, but I probably have a body shape more suited to being a necromancer than a cavalier.
Gotcha. Well,
although I have studied the blade in the past.
See, I you've got some weapons experience. So.
Garden of the Blade. Holy shit, that's such a metal Garden name, though. Garden of the Blade.
New band name ideas.
Oh shit! Yeah, roll with that. Garden of the Blade.
Garden of the Blade.
Gosh.
That's why we do this. For ideas, inspiration.
I think there's an anime called Blade Garden, though. Everybody will just think you're doing that. I think. I don't know. It just sounds like something that an anime would be named.
I mean, Garden of the Dead is kind of a George Romero.
Yeah, I got that. I mean, that was always pretty obvious, I think.
So you doing all right, Garden? Everything? How was Vegas doing? How's the weather?
Vegas's weather is fucking bipolar right now. It has been pissing rain on and off. It was in like the high 70s, low 80s for about 3 days, and now I have my heater on again.
Oh, geez, that's crazy. It is hot here in North Carolina. It is. We're in the 80s all of a sudden, and I'm not ready for it. It's too hot. It feels like a summer day. It's weird.
Yeah, we're at 57 in gale force winds today. It's been a windy week.
The weather is changing.
But it's been good. I saw Bruce Springsteen last week.
Yeah, you did. That's dope.
How's that the boss doing? Fun.
Oh, he's doing good. You know, he's still up there bouncing around for 3 hours without stopping.
That's fucking amazing. That's all I hear about Bruce Springsteen. He's just one of the hardest performers out there and just kills it for like 3 hours straight. I'm like, damn.
Yeah. Everybody on Vegas Facebook was salty that he didn't play Born in the USA, a song he hasn't played in the United States in like 20 years.
Lord, how are people still mad about like that? Like, yeah, like that's literally not been part of the set list since like 2000, like since the year 2000, I think.
Yeah,
which was the last time he played in Vegas, and he did it as a solo acoustic song when he played it because, you know, the whole reason he stopped playing it, I think, is because you people don't fucking
get it. Like, everybody just completely misappropriates that shit. You got a catchy chorus, and then you excised the rest of it.
Born in the like U.S. I'm born in the U.S. This sounds patriotic.
Aaron Lewis getting all up on that.
I think it's very telling that the songs from Born in the USA came from the same demo sessions that brought us Nebraska.
They
were just the songs he decided to make electric instead.
Yeah, that track.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also, you know, I get this. I watched an anime.
What did you do? What?
Yeah, which one?
I watched Delicious in Dungeon.
All right, yeah. Yeah, I've been watching that.
I see this on my Netflix.
I've been watching that like two episodes at a time with some friends, and it seems real formulaic so far, and I'm just kind of like, I feel like I'm falling off of it.
I watched all 13 episodes in one sitting.
Damn, like we were like 8 episodes in and I'm still not feeling it, so I don't know that it's for me.
The big you're on the cusp of some of the big exciting moments, and I'm also told that this manga is 14 volumes long. We're probably less than a third of the way done with this story.
Like, you're talking about like Freer and shit, where it's just like, oh, we adapted like the first 6 volumes of 45.
Speaking of Freer and, I have started reading the manga.
Oh, nice.
And I'm enjoying it quite a bit.
People talk highly of that. Like, Land of the Lustrous is ending next month, and I binge the shit out of that, so that'll be like my manga rip for a while, I think.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah.
The other talking person, if you didn't know, that is to my virtual left, is vaping in the parking lot with Dwayne the Rock Johnson. It's Polly. Polly, how's the Rock doing?
It doesn't matter how I'm doing.
Wonderful.
There you go. You didn't think I could pull out something like that, did you? You didn't think I had it in me. Yeah. I grew up with parents.
Rock is pretty.
I grew up with parents that were watching like wrestling in that era. Like every Monday night was like a ritual, bouncing between TNT and USA. Like, all right, they're on commercial break now. Go over back to WWF.
The Monday Night Wars.
Yeah. I was there. I caught all of that shit just by osmosis because my parents are just big fans. So I was just like, yep. Like, I grew up with wrestling in my household. Like, the first thing I can remember is like Saturday nights, like on TBS, there would always be wrestling in the house. So it was just like, yep. Like, that's just a part of my background, even though I was just never into it myself.
I have always had a kind of, I guess you couldn't call it casual at this point. There was moments I'd be really hardcore into it. And especially talking in the 90s era, like I was really hooked with WCW Nitro because of the NWO at the time. And then like when Raw really started to get more adult and like, you know, my parents didn't want me to watch it.
That makes you want to watch it more.
Just wanted to watch it more. And it was a really exciting time. Then I kind of dropped off, but now I'm actually going to be there for WrestleMania 40. I think as a casual viewer.
Oh God, that shit's next weekend.
Oh wow, that's right.
Time go anymore.
No, yeah.
I don't know. Well,
yeah.
Shall we get this going?
Get it going. Pull this train out the station. We got an album to talk about.
We do.
Let's go.
And you know, I I'm excited to talk about this one with y'all. Mm-hmm. And again, this is for your listeners out there. This is like, you know, a big part of this is like a shocking, like, what, you like this kind of thing? And you know, so I'm very curious to what my co-hosts think.
I don't think I'm ever going to be shocked when you tell me you like something, because I feel like your styles are often more outwardly prolific than Minor Tailor, than Minor Gardens. I think that like we both kind of have wheelhouses that we very firmly seat in. Whereas I think I don't know your wheelhouse. I feel like you're just more prolific.
I am a traveler. Yeah. I just go different places.
Yeah. Yeah. So
it's really the story of how I found this album, just going places and searching around. I think that's what's interesting to me is like, okay, I know this is something that is definitely not in y'all's wheelhouse, unless you're hiding something from me, you know.
Guilty pleasures, which I don't even believe in.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, again, no shame. There's no shame on
it. I have no shame in anything that I enjoy, so you will never find that in me.
And yeah, we talked about, I guess, give a quick little recap. Again, you can catch the whole thing on the previous cast for more details. But this was an album that Mandy Moore, you know, basically Mandy Moore was a Britney Spears copy at the time. And then she kind of, you know, got into her mid-20s, wanted to be taken a little bit more seriously, wanted to do music she connected more with, and wanted to write her own music. Mm-hmm. And as well as she was like in, you know, acting roles as well at this time. So she was really kind of trying to build her career. And so what we get is Amanda Lee. And like Polly mentioned, you know, if you look at the cover of this thing, it's, you know, you can tell it like, oh, okay, this is a little bit more... this feels like it'd be a little bit more of an intimate or a little bit more of a, you know, just take it a little more. We're not doing the pop thing anymore. So to kick it off, let's go in. I guess we'll start where it begins, right? The very first
That's usually the good place to start a review, I think, is the first
track. Let's start
track.
In the middle.
Let's start with track 7, and then we're going to jump to track 2. You've got to listen to this album in a specific order, right?
Right, to truly unlock it. Yes.
Yeah.
So here we go. Let's go ahead. We'll play a little bit of our first track now for our listeners, and that is Merrimack River. Merrimack River. Mandy Moore has said that this is exactly the song she wanted to open the album. You know, you initially get this waltz-like strum, and then Mandy's voice comes in, and I think she has a very beautiful voice.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's the kind of voice that you hear that would not surprise you that Disney would be like, hey, maybe you want to come make a movie with us.
Yeah.
As Mandy Moore would later on voice the main character for Tangled. And speaking of that Disney vibe, there is something of like this musical show tune little bit you know, thing that it's got working with it.
There's very elaborate arrangements that work throughout this entire album that are very like, well, I mean, I think that they're actually really simple arrangements. It's just, they sound much bigger than they are. And I that's something that I really liked about this album was that I think it's arranged really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would be credit to, Mike Viola. Mm-hmm, and Mike Viola, comes in and sings, the duet, in this song. I'll be honest with you. Initially, when I first heard that moment with Mike's vocals coming in, I was like, oh, I don't know if I can do this. I have a weird relationship with like musical and show tunes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if I feel like something is going to be a little forced on me or a little too sappy or corny, you know, like mm-hmm. I just like a wall wants to build up, you know?
Yeah.
But when we get to that chorus of "Don't say you're not amazed when you know you are," that shit hit me like a truck, and it made me swoon, and it really sold the album for me. The track for me,
right.
And I was like, okay, I'm on board. I'll bite. I think that's a lovely little melody. So let's pass it around a little
round
bit.
Table.
Let's see. Polly, you've been talking a little bit, so why don't you give a little bit more of your takes?
This is not the track I would have started the album with.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. For me, I don't know. It doesn't strike me as album opener. I would have even just put it as track two. It just doesn't strike me as an opener for some reason. I think that, like, great performances all around. It's the melodies, again, just kind of, they're just dead on. Like, everything about this track is immaculately just really well put together. I can't really find an argument for it other than, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like the opening track to me. But that's kind of really my only big complaint with it. It's not a type of music that I immediately gravitate toward. It's very, very, very like folksy and hymny kind of way. But I don't mind it. I think it's a good track. It's a good song. That fucking chorus will just get right in your head. Just bore right into the back of your head.
There's something about it that I feel like I could see Steven Universe singing this song.
Oh, God, yeah. Like, this whole album is very sing-songy in that way, where it's like, these songs could probably be, like, in a cartoon like that, but just like with different lyrics and, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of vibe that I get from a lot of this album, for sure.
Yeah. Garden.
Oh, boy.
I can't wait to hear from you on this whole album. our metalhead.
The first time I listened to this album all the way through, this song starts playing and then it just keeps going.
Yeah, it's
and I think to myself,
long.
Oh no, I'm gonna be a big fucking Debbie Downer this whole album.
That Regina Spektor record from the year before last.
No, I remember he didn't like that one at all. And you know, even though I would say Regina is a much more adventurous songwriter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's, I guess if we are going to singer songwriter, piano,
you know, acoustic guitar. It's just like,
especially on this first track.
Yeah. The gate, it just hits weird if that's not where you really want to go.
Right.
It's slow and drippy, my favorite kind of song.
Yeah.
And not how I would have started an album out. You know, I don't know. I didn't. Right away, the vibes are not for me.
I hear you. Well, I think, if again, y'all, this is an album that you cannot get on streaming platforms officially, right? So I'm gonna give out some numbers here, but they're only from YouTube views.
Okay.
That's the only way I could really gather a metric, right?
Mm-hmm.
On YouTube, this is the most popular song.
Because it's track number one, you ding dong, and everybody plays the playlist first.
But I'm just saying, it's 42,000, and like, that's, to me, is substantial compared to everything else. And,
I think it's just
you do have a point there. You do have a point there. I'm not arguing with you on that. You're absolutely right. But I have noticed that this one, and later on when we get to Break Your Heart Every Day of the Week, this one I think makes the tour every now and then. So, you know, it's again, I get what y'all mean. It is kind of, it's starting off with a kind of this waltz like beat is maybe not the best way to open your album. I think it's, to me, it's just trying to cast a dreamlike sort of ambiance, so to speak. So, and again, I do, the more I have listened to this album, I know, I enjoy that chorus so much.
Like, it's a damn good chorus.
Yeah, yeah, that, you know, I always, I'm like, oh, you know what? I'll let something slide. And, you know, that reminds me, as we go forward, I like this album. Mm-hmm. There are things that do annoy me about the album. However, there is, there's things that, despite of that, like despite of some choices, that I'm like, all right, I like this because this tune comes through, and, mm-hmm. and this comes through. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, is there any more thoughts here? Or should we move on?
I think we can move on.
All right. Yeah. Let's go to track number two, Ferndale.
These are the thoughts that keep me up at night. I sleep with a dog, dog barking, no bite. In love with a fool, feasting for my eyes. Ferndale, Ferndale, I thought I knew you well. Follow the kicks and punches with
following the opening show tune like waltzy ballad that is Mary McRither, we get much more into a folky country pop of that 70s era. That
an actual opener.
Yes. that influenced Mandy Moore for this record. And I think Ferndale captures that rolling folk rock kind of thing. I think it does it pretty well. Garden, what do you think? Well, why don't you open up a little bit more and tell us what's up?
Folky country pop. all of my favorite words. I liked this song more. I think it's got a little more pep in its step, but it definitely. Psychic, I said the word show tune. And yeah, this album just has a. This song, especially, I feel, has like kind of a musical theater vibe to it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And yeah, sure. So this one's a little more enjoyable and a little more, you know, peppy and catchy and whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, my notes are. Too short to make an impression.
I can't, like I imagine Garden sitting over there, gritting fists, trying to like, don't say it's shit. Don't say it's shit. Don't say it's shit.
No, go ahead. Yeah. You can roast me. I mean, this is.
I will roast music. I will never roast the person listening to it.
There we go. And again, this is what this is all about.
Yeah.
So I do have to ask Garden. I was listening to this track again today, and there's something in a chord progression in it that reminds me of Iggy Pop's Passenger.
Hold on.
That would I'm not... I feel like, yeah, that tracks because, I mean, Iggy Pop is primarily known for punk music, and I feel like a lot of punk chord progressions are fairly simple and probably used a lot, so that wouldn't shock me.
I mean, it's, you know, it's dressed up.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a folk rock song.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like, most of it was like, am I getting like some Passenger, you know, like... In a scene, in the night. Like, I could, like, almost...
I can kind of hear it, yeah.
Yeah, I could almost feel this, you know. And I'm not saying that Mandy Moore was listening to it.
Kind of the same rhythm to it.
Yeah.
It's similar.
Yeah, and, you know, it is 70s influence, yeah, so yeah. Who knows?
The Passenger was prime... David Bowie, Iggy Pop era, so all kinds of different stuff got in.
This is an album with 70s influence, but Iggy Pop is not the 70s artist that I would tie this album to.
Oh, definitely not.
There is one particular artist that comes up that I'm gonna hold off on. There is one particular artist that comes up that came to mind later and was like, oh yeah, this is kind of the vibe you were going for, isn't it? But as far as Ferndale, I like this track. This is what I would have opened the album with. And then I would have put Merrimack River as track two. I like this song. This is a jam. This is like, hey, the album's here. We can play now. Let's go.
It's got a fun little acoustic strum.
It's got a great breakdown at the end, too. It's got a real nice finish. Like, I like this track. I think it's dope.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think Mandy Moore, she says this song is about... let me see, first impressions and how they affect and change your world. Yeah. And, you know, I definitely get
very
that.
Yeah.
So it's a favorite of mine on this album.
I like it. I'm a fan.
Yeah. And, you know, I think if I was to dock a point from the track, you know, and this is going to come up as we talk more. I'm not a fan of backing vocals that go, just a little too
much. It comes off as a little...
It's a little cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm never usually a fan of those kinds of backing vocal tracks.
It's brief in the song, but I was like, but yeah, I do enjoy this one. And maybe I gotta try switching it up and trying This Is the Opener in Merrimack Room just to see how that would play.
I think that would flow a little better.
Work. Yeah. I think that would work. All right, any more thoughts, or shall we continue on?
I'm good.
Okay, well, here we go. Track three, I Could Break Your Heart Any Day of the Week. Your heart any day of the week.
I don't think you could. You're willing. I'm willing to let you try, but
okay, all right. Well, I've got 7 days.
Yeah,
and
you got 7 days to pull this off.
7 days to pull it off. Yeah. Does it have to be consecutive days, or can I?
It can be any day of the week. So okay. I'm gonna say you pick a week that you want to try and break my heart, and then you will be on the timer. You'll have 7 days to try and make that work.
All right.
This is a really dumb bit, by the way.
By the way, when it comes to breaking hearts, not a fan.
It's kind of a bummer.
That's my inner conflict every day.
Kind of need
my kids.
Yeah, right. I imagine. Yeah, it's a pretty big responsibility there.
I want the cotton candy, and I'm like, you had a bunch, and they start crying, and I break their hearts.
Yeah,
like, damn, I'm a jerk.
God, I was that kid that just like bought the tub of cotton candy and just ate it all and regretted it at 7 p.m.
That's we've had a few of those experiences.
Oh, it's great.
Yep. All right, so I told you.
That's one of those moments where you just kind of go, you know what? I'll go ahead. I'll let you cook. You go ahead and try it out.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yep. Totally. Totally. So I could break your heart any day of the week. This is the single of this album.
I could tell you. For one, it's track three. Track three is almost always your single. And it's like, this is the most outwardly poppy kind of song.
Right.
Like if I was going to lure people into my more intimate personal singer-songwriter album, I would absolutely release the most pop adjacent song first as a single.
Totally. But it was the only one.
It's got double tracked vocal harmonies for the refrain.
Mm-hmm. So she didn't want this to be the single, though.
I bet. Yeah, she probably didn't want it.
But she had some fans, not fans, I guess friends, mm-hmm. coax her into it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, hey, pick this song as a single and you should do this music video idea. So Mandy Moore is a fan of the UFC.
Oh.
And her friends, knowing this, is like, all right, let's do a video where you're basically like in a dojo and there's MMA fighters training at the dojo.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the video is.
It's very silly.
To this song, yes.
It's very silly.
Yeah. I think it's a silly, but it's pretty fun.
I like silly music videos, so I'm not complaining. Yeah.
And that's what it is. It's a bunch of mixed martial arts just kicking each other's ass. But it has a big star in it. It has the former lightweight heavyweight champion of UFC, Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
He shows up near the end. And like Mandy Moore starts teasing him and like takes off her like little coat she's got on, mm-hmm. like revealing a little bit. And he's like starting to get like, you know, a little turned on. But then she kicks him in the nuts.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great. Hmm.
Kick your nuts any day of the week.
She should have changed it to that.
That's what I would have done.
So, yeah. So, Polly, let's tell me some more. What you think of this song?
You know what vibe I get from this summary for some reason? I get like very mid to late 90s country music.
I grew
up in a household with parents that were very into the cutting edge of country music at the time. Like, you know, they had those like Clint Black's, Alan Jackson kind of stuff going on. So like, I know those kinds of tunes. And like, as soon as this hit, I was immediately thrown back into my bedroom here, like hearing my dad in the living room listening to something on like TNN or something. It was just like, oh, okay. But yeah, this is a good song. I like it. It's a fun jam. And it obviously, like, it's a good vibe to put me in. So right, it's just like, I'm not the biggest country fan in the world, but you know, you grow up around the stuff. You acclimate and develop a bit of a taste for it. And I thought that this was just like catchy and jaunty enough and kind of gave me those very similar vibes. To that point in time, and I was just, like, this is a vibe. I like this. This is solid.
Yeah.
Also, like, her not picking this as a single is as funny as, like, because, it probably made more sense. It reminds me of, like, Cypress Hill not wanting to go with Insane in the Brain as a single from Black mm-hmm. Sunday. And then, like, oh, no, wait, we were totally wrong on that. The record company was right.
It happens.
Yeah.
Garden, how do you find it?
It's okay, I guess.
I love all your responses.
Yeah, this is going to be the best. This is going to be my favorite Garden episode, I think. Again, sitting there the whole time, just like, just don't say shit. Just don't say shit.
I mean, the chorus does suck.
I think it's
Monday,
fine.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Actually, that's funny you say that because that is
Friday. I'm in love, bitch.
Yeah, that was about to say. Yeah. I will say that was actually one of my critiques of this song.
Like,
it's funny that you say that.
I thought it was an homage. Like, that's just what I felt. It felt like an homage to me.
The thing is, I feel like there's a lot of pop songs that does the counting of the days of the week.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
like, it's not just, it's just not The Cure. The Cure is, and that song sucked, you know, when they did it. So,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like, and I love The Cure, by the way.
Yeah,
and
I mean, just we love
like,
The Cure.
Like I just like murdered a kid and like, sorry, I love the fucking Cure.
Yeah,
like,
we love The Cure here. Like, Disintegration is the greatest album ever.
Yes, yeah, and even though, like, I sang that song sucked, I would still fucking sing that song.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So, that song's on, yeah. My ass will be singing them lyrics.
But yeah, that's, you know, that's, it's just something where I'm like, all right, we're counting down the days again. there's another thing that I'm not a fan of, and it's throughout this album, but it really just punches me in the ears in this one. It's the harpsichord.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a sound that it's so front. It's so, like, in my face in the mix that and it's cheap sounding.
It doesn't sound, yeah, it sounds really synthetic.
Yeah,
yeah,
like,
I don't think this
is a real fucking harpsichord.
I know they use some
live shit.
Yeah, they
use
some live orchestration in this album, but I do not think that harpsichord is real. That thing sounds fake as fuck to me.
Yeah, yeah. But yet, despite that, I don't mind this song. I'm like, all right, you know, like I. There's something about the performance, the tongue in cheek, the not taking it too seriously. Mm-hmm. There's a fun to it, you know, that kind of, like, I don't know, beats the rest. Beats the stuff that I'm not really into.
Sure.
So, yeah, you know, and totally is the single that she I'm glad she picked, I guess, as a single. Makes the sense to be the single.
Yeah.
And it's this, besides Merrimack River, is the only one I have seen from this album that she'll use on tour.
Yeah.
So, which is interesting because I think there's better songs on this record. But
I do too. Absolutely.
Yeah. The Garden. Did you have any more thoughts or insights?
Gritting
or
fists.
Let's go on. Let's
can hear the fists just grinding further nails into palm. We haven't broken skin yet.
Yeah. Well, we're not at that point yet. We'll get there though.
There's a couple points.
I wonder if it's the next one. So if we're done, we're going to go to the next track.
Sure.
Pocket Philosopher.
Now I'm walking on my own 2 feet. The sun is shining. My shadow's stretched across the street. And I meet the eyes of a stranger. I can't quite place him, and I wouldn't replace him for a second, or a minute, or an hour of the day. I turned the corner, I was feeling good. All the birds are humming, the bees are buzzing, the trees, all the leaves looked a little.
To me, yeah, pee-pee, you know. Pee-pee, psychic power, or pee-pee as in...
Pocket Philosopher.
Yeah. All right, so...
Poke points.
This is the... Poke points. This is obviously the most... For me, it's the most chirpy, bubbly...
Oh, yeah.
Paul McCartney piano pop tune of the album.
That's kind of where I... That literally have that in my notes.
Yeah, this is the Paul McCartney vibe.
Yeah.
you know, Mandy Moore says the song is about meeting someone new and wanting to stop time so you could figure them out a little bit more. I think I'm really curious to hear y'all's take on this one because the aesthetic of this song, the tone of this song is like the most counter to your new metal loving asses.
Yeah, this song's grating. This song is just absolutely grating for me. This is Poly Poison.
Before we get to Poly Poison, how we doing there, Garden?
I have written, I'm just going to read my notes for this one. Jaunty Western lounge tune that's so goofy I can't tell if I like it or if it's the worst song yet. And I don't know, it's funny you mentioned Paul McCartney, because now I'm just hearing that harpsichord in my head going, oh bloody, oh blah.
Yeah, like it's right.
Life goes on.
Yeah, like that's this song persona.
Penny Lane is in my heart and in my... Yeah, you know, it's got that going on.
But, Polly. Yeah, I mean, it's. I find this... I don't think I find this song as grating as Polly does.
Yeah, this is great. This is like me scraping my face across concrete.
Look, the cheery swag in this song is not my cup of tea, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, this is a good example of a song that feels like a show tune that is forcing me to feel happy.
Yeah, I feel like you're just trying to drag me into being happy.
Yeah.
Everything is awesome.
But I said close. It almost gets on my nerves, but I think what saves it for being just a little too much is that I think there's something just sweet and personable about it that Mandy Moore sort of just goes all in on. That isn't, I don't know. It's like, boy, we're right on the line, but God,
there's anything about this album
cute about this. So
if there's anything about this album that I can say definitively, it's that despite the fact that I might not like a bit of the material on it, there's no point where I am not convinced that she isn't singing from the heart. And I think that counts for something. It doesn't feel fake and manufactured in the way that I thought it would. Like, I really, like, these do feel like genuine sentiments being sung to me by somebody that believes them. So that's one thing that where it's just like, while this song may grate on me, I have no doubt, like, I don't in any way perceive it as, like, fake or, you know, nonsense. Yeah. It's nothing like that. So, like, if anything, like, her performances throughout, I think, are just solid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, and I think the song has sort of this nice bounce about it, you know, like it's a nice bouncy thing going on. Like, I'm not going to criticize it on. And even though it's not my favorite, and it's definitely not a song I'm just going to like want to hear, like seek out by itself.
Mm-hmm.
I do say that it is placed in the record where at a point where I don't want to ever like find myself wanting to skip it either.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just kind of keeps the momentum of the album just kind of alive and well.
Sure.
You know, and again, this is by YouTube views. And again, this is not the single. It's the second most popular song.
Oh, interesting. So
I thought that was interesting. Any more thoughts on PP, Pocket Philosopher?
I think I've had enough PP.
All right, enough of the PP. Let's take it to a song about home.
Could I close the door behind me? Lock myself outside alone. Could somebody please remind me why this bird still hasn't flown to a treetop on the mountainside, a joint and arrow in the sky. I know someday I will be home.
This is the point in the album where I started to realize, oh, hey, there's like a lot of Joni Mitchell in here, isn't there?
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, this is
where. I don't listen to a ton of Joni Mitchell, so.
I'm just saying, like, this song in particular is where it was just like, oh, wow, yeah, I could just go throw on Blue right now, couldn't I? Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I just, that's the really the vibe here. This is just like that same kind of folksy, plucky, unassuming little tune. It's not offensive. It doesn't really stand out for me, but this was like where it was like Joni Mitchell's sound, voice, and just like everything. I was, oh, this is where that's coming from. I think I know what this album wants to be a little more now.
Yeah. I can hear the Joni Mitchell. I also get a little bit of John Denver.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
lyrically.
God. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Lyrically. Yeah. Especially. Garden, how do you feel?
Oh, I think this might be the worst song on the album.
Interesting. Go on.
Okay, so here's my comment on this, and I think this applies to a lot of this album in general, is I feel like this song is supposed to be a big belting vocal showcase song, but like her voice is pleasant, but she doesn't have like,
she can't belt like that
big of a range.
Yeah.
And she doesn't have like a particularly forceful voice.
Yeah. That's definitely an issue that I come across with on a lot of the material on this album, is that she's got a pleasant voice. She sounds good over this music. Sounds honest. But yeah, the range is not there. She's not like particularly belting and emoting in a way that I think that this song kind of like wants to be. Like, you're not getting that, you know, Rocky Mountain High kind of vibe when you, sure, you know, you listen to John Denver's Rocky Mountain High and he hits that fucking chorus. It's like, oh, hey, you have my attention.
Yeah.
She
just can't.
But otherwise, this sounds like the kind of thing I could hear in my student union.
So this song I did a 180 on.
Uh-huh.
I actually thought when I was first listening to this record, this song was the one that did not initially come out and grab me in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually, I don't know what happened, but I was like, because, you know, y'all were making the comment that, you know, oh, this needs to be more of an outward thing. Because so far, this record has been sort of kind of more external, right?
Yeah.
And I think the song is more internal. I think this is a very much more reflective and contemplative song, mm-hmm, just kind of judging by the lyrics, judging by the vibe. You know, I think that this is like, I'm kind of sitting down, reflecting on things on a nice spring sunset.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what's, I think one of the things that it's about, you know, Mandy Moore says, is about the struggles between the definitions of home, of when you are a child and when you have your own family. So I think this is more of an inward kind of production.
Oh, God, my brain took that. My brain took inward production and just turned it into something else entirely. Y'all, I'm sorry, I'm very high right now, so there's a lot of things that are maybe funnier than they should be when they hit my ears, like just hearing inward, it's like, oh no.
Well, you know what I'm saying, like more introspective.
I know.
Maybe that's the word I'm trying to say. But look, of all the tracks on this album, it's the one that's grown on me the most.
Mm.
And I think that I feel like I get where it's coming from.
Sure.
And
sure.
And also I like that French horn. Like, I think the French horn sounds good.
Mm.
So if we are done with our inward production, then let us continue with our outward production.
Yes, please.
And on to track six, Ever Blue.
Waited here for you, Ever Blue.
The Foo Fighters inspired track.
Yes!
So, continuing the introspective vibe, we have the song Ever Blue. This is the most somber of the album.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little more darker. And it was co-written by Americana singer-songwriter Lorraine McKenna. I'm not familiar with this person, but, you know, they had a hand in this. And I feel like I can tell the way the lyrics are on this one, it seems...
Whole different vibe lyrically.
Yes.
When you look at the rest of this album, this song's lyrics are definitely like a much darker tone and just like, this is like one of these things is not like the other. And I kind of like it for that because I like this song a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is my favorite song.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite track on the album.
Yeah. How about you, Garden? What you feel about the song?
It's okay. My problem with this one is that it's two drippy songs in a row. So when you're listening to this as an album experience, I just like,
Yeah.
Yeah.
On its own, you know, I think it's got kind of a groovy beat to it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of it's got like a dusty kind of drum sound.
Yeah, it's very, I love that drum sound. Yeah, it's really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Polly?
I'm going to make a weird comparison and that I think that this is like a forgotten Smashing Pumpkins ballad from the mid-90s.
Oh, God, he just put nasally-ass Billy Corgan over it.
I could hear that. Polly.
Yeah.
Go on.
I mean, like I said, like this is my favorite track on the album. And again, it's because it's got that darker tone to it. It's dusty. It's subdued. It sounds dangerous. It's definitely like, you've got to give, if you're going to give this album any kind of credit, I think that a thing that it does very well is that this album is like a mishmash of styles musically. And I don't think that it's ever felt like unfocused. Like it still feels like a very focused piece of work, even if like, you know, might not enjoy a lot of what I've heard so far. I think that it like as an album experience, it feels very, it still feels very considered. And this was kind of like this was kind of the early climax of the album for me.
Not to spoil anything,
but this is definitely...
No, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like, this is my favorite track. I think it's just very sonically beautiful and vocally, genuinely heartfelt, even if she may not have written the lyrics herself, perhaps. It's like, again, it's still very much, you know... Yeah, you're singing that and I believe it! So it's... best track on the album. It's really good.
Yeah, and just echoing a lot of what you said, this is also my favorite song on the album. I think it makes a fantastic centerpiece to the album. Mm-hmm. The previous songs really kind of build up well to this spot. Mm-hmm. It feels earned mm-hmm. to have kind of a moment like this.
Yeah.
And I think what really, what I like about this album, this song, is that there's just a weight about it that's like nice. Yeah. I can't describe it any better. It's just, it hits really well.
There's something about the songwriting here where it's just like, I feel like the rest of the album needed something here that's not there in the other tracks.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you say dangerous, and I think that's because there is an emotional vulnerability that seems to be on display mm-hmm. here. There's something, even though this, to use a garden phrase, it's kind of a slow, drippy song. But at the same time, there's something quite arresting about it for me, where I feel that intimacy. I especially love Mandy Moore's vocals during this one. And I actually think Mike Viola's back vocals kind of makes a really just sends the song all the way home in a pretty beautiful way.
I've been okay with Mike's backing vocals the whole time. Like, it's not really bothered me at all.
Yeah, yeah. Same. There was that when I first initially heard.
Yeah, that first initial.
I was like, whoa. I got cool with it. I think it's interesting that this is the third most popular song. By 22,000 views.
Wow.
And that's pretty neat for a song. This album is kind of, again, it's kind of lost. Mm-hmm. This is a lost album. And this song is kind of a deep cut.
So, yeah, this is a deep cut. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was also when I first heard it, it was the moment I realized, okay, I'm enjoying this album. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sold on Mandy Moore. Like, sure. She's got some chops. And the interest peaked, mm-hmm. Which might have been a slight jinx.
Ooh, because
as we talked about, as Polly touched upon, if there's a critique, is that it's not really a critique of this song. It's just the rest of the album doesn't quite reach, doesn't quite match it. Doesn't quite match, the highs here.
Right.
And
I think the issue I have, because you guys talk about how this song sounds more dangerous, and for me, I almost wonder if it's maybe they didn't, try to be, the big top 40 pop record on what I'm hearing is a bit of a limited budget. Their record label for this song doesn't have a fucking Wikipedia page.
Yeah,
it doesn't.
Yeah, yep. This is all very small and indie from the sounds of it.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, this song benefits from not having a fake-ass harpsichord all over the place.
Absolutely.
They all sound big and nice and stuff, but there's also, a lot of the big instrumentation on this album to me has kind of like an artificiality to it.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
I don't know where that comes from, but maybe that's just me.
I think that's there. I think that's, there's probably some budget. There's probably some late 2000s recording datedness about it too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So any more thoughts or shall we continue?
I think we can continue.
Okay. So we have had our Everblue. We are now continuing on to track 7. Merrimack River, it's a reprise. I don't know if we really need to talk about it much.
I don't even know that I'm going to include an audio clip because it's literally like, what, under a minute?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just serving as an interlude to kick off side 2.
Yeah, it's literally just, here's the end of side 1. It's just a reprise of Merrimack River. It's... It's there.
I don't say why.
Yeah, yeah, it's just there. It's just there.
I feel like, hey, we want to make an album.
This is an album.
Have a side A and side B. Here we go. So that's it. Nothing really to say here. Nothing profound to say here. Let's continue on then to track 8, Love to Love Me Back. First full song on side B, Love to Love Me Back, a full-on, no-frills country pop song that is exactly what its lyrics are talking about.
Yeah.
Wanting reciprocated love. Yeah. Polly.
Yeah.
Tell us about Love to Love Me Back. Do you want love to love you back?
I mean, I could use that lately, given past relationships have gone. Yeah, it'd be nice to have love me back a little bit. Sometimes it's nice to get a little back about what you put into something, but, you know.
That's right.
No shade. All the shade, actually. Lots. Lots and lots of shade in one particular instance most recently. So, oof. Anyway,
do I need to kick some ass?
It's fine. If you want,
we'll continue.
Yeah. I like the verse vocal melody on this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a pop country song that a little unassuming. It's just kind of like, yeah, that's a country pop song. It's got vocal melody and doesn't really, you know, inspire many other thoughts, unfortunately. I'm afraid this is the point in the album where my thoughts may become a little more similar to Garden's.
It's a better version of Pocket Philosopher.
Hey, that's
progress.
That's pretty positive.
It's pretty progress.
Yeah. I also have a Darker in Hindsight written down.
Oh
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay,
yeah, yeah, yeah. We're gonna get to that, by the way.
It's another pop song with vaguely folky instrumentation, and it's not the most irritating song on the album, but
put that on the sticker on the front of the album. Not the most annoying song.
I managed to listen to this album a couple of times without skipping anything, so
nice.
It is a breezy album.
It's breezy.
It's not offensive. You know, I think the most it lays it on is Pocket Philosopher.
Yeah.
Hey, I'll give Mandy Moore this. I never listened to that whole fucking Regina Spektor album all the way through.
Gonna break Regina's heart any day of the week.
Yeah.
She went full Zionist on us recently.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, fuck. Well, that's sad. I'm just now discovering this.
I no longer feel bad about how down I was on her fucking dogshit boring vocal pop music.
This was me finding out that the drummer for 311 is a big old anti-vaxxer Trump guy. It's like, good! Like, how are you in a band like 311 and you end up being the Trump guy? I don't understand!
That reminded me of
Johnny Rotten.
Yeah. Well, Johnny Rotten's shit was all manufactured anyway.
Well, he was a poser. They were posers.
Yeah,
anyway.
Sex Pistols were fucking phonies anyway.
Gosh. Well, I'm going to go on and talk about this. My heart's broken now. Yeah. All right. Guard has broken my heart.
Now this is podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, interestingly enough, from my research, which was mostly on Wikipedia, this was the first song written for the album, and would kind of kick off and drive making this album. Mm. With that knowledge, I can kind of let the song a little bit off the hook. But besides not really liking the lyrics of this song, it is my least favorite track. It's not that I think it's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, as you know, echoing y'all's sentiments. It's a country pop song. There's nothing about it that I think previous tracks have something about them that kind of has a spark, at least. Mm-hmm. This one is just a little too straightforward. It's quite vanilla in its production. Just kind of generic. It's just really white. You know?
Yeah.
Like, that's
a great, like, big white song.
Yeah, it's just a white song.
White toast.
Yeah. You know, it is listenable. It's not something I have this urge to skip, but every time I listen, I kind of check out on it, and I think it kills the album's momentum. And this is my theory, is that this is one of the longest songs on this album, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say that like 2.5 to 3.5 minutes is like a sweet spot for pop songs.
Yeah.
This song pushes 4 minutes and 12 seconds. So yeah. I'm thinking, you know, if this was tighter or just a little, like if they just killed some of the instrument, I don't know, but maybe it goes down better for me. Yeah. But as it is,
it needs a trim.
Yeah. It needs a trim. Which is weird to say, because this second half, it's also really breezy.
Yeah, so it's like, real
I need to trim, and we're in, you know, I'm going to discuss in the next, there's issues with the next song that we're about to go into, that I'm like, well, this is undercooked, this is overcooked. So, the song is just a glass of water. It's just, yeah, you know, nothing more for me. So, if there's not anything more to say, shall we continue?
We shall.
Indian Summer, the piano ballad. Now, this one is interesting because Mandy Moore says this was the song that carried the most severe demo-itis for her. So if you're not sure what that means, is she apparently was more attached to the demo of this song than the final mix. Mm. I'd be kind of curious to hear what the demo sounded like. Mm-hmm. There are parts of the song that I like. I like that piano sound. It just sounds fucking huge. Mm-hmm. And it's like impactful. And there's also kind of a nice little like bass lick going on with it as well. Mm. So you have a very full and resonant sound that seems like we're embarking on something before it all seems to just go out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't help that this song also features cheap-ass harpsichord.
Oh, it makes its glorious return!
Yes. And the thing is I was listening closely, and I realized there's actually some really interesting horn sounds happening in the background, but the harpsichord
it's
is so in your fucking
overpowering
face.
Overpowering everything.
Yeah, that it's just like, why? So, I don't know. I would like to see the production calls on this one, the mix calls on this one, and have another round of it.
Yeah, I would be interested in hearing the demo, because I think that, like, what you have on the final, like, this does not cut it.
Right, yeah. And then there's, like, again, these weird background vocals that do, like, and it's just like, you're killing this thing. Like,
yeah.
Take these layers back.
Yeah, it needed to be fewer layers.
You still don't have the most fleshed out song in the world, but it would go down easier than these things. So, yeah. Polly, how are you feeling about
it? I think we really just nailed it, honestly. It's just like, this is a song that it's trying to do a lot, but it doesn't do much of it well. And it just sounds conflicted and just like, this is way overtuned. This is a song that is just like, they got it in the studio. They took it way beyond the demo, farther than it ever needed to go. And it just sounds way overtuned. Like, it's just like, you went in and you loved on this way too much. And it just sounds like this.
Got it?
I have written down absolute nothing of a song.
Yeah, there's something missed here.
Yeah.
And what we run into, we have the, the previous song, which, as we called, kind of like the white toast of the album. And now we have this song, which seems like it's trying to add layers to something and kind of not accomplishing anything by it. And, I like those, the sounds of those keys, but it doesn't seem like the idea really takes off, or that we have other instruments and effects that just really sort of, I don't know, bury this thing. And kind of, it's really does kind of stop the momentum, that was sort of earned.
Yeah.
You know, things are a little derailed at this point. So, and yeah, it's weird to say, because at one point I'm like, they need to take back stuff, but then there's not much left of this album. So I don't know. It the second half of this thing does have a weird shape to it. Will Mandy Moore rein it back in? Let's find out. Here's our next track. Penultimate song, I would say the climax of the album, Nothing, Everything.
Mm-hmm.
This was the last song written during the recording. I would say it plays like something of a breakup song. It's about telling someone that maybe it is time to move on, and that you feel like that person deserves the best because you're not it. And according to Wikipedia, they worked on the melody for this song for a few days, but the lyrics themselves were written in 15 minutes, so I don't think we need to read.
Yeah!
Yeah, I don't think we need to read too much in the lyrics. However, I actually enjoy this one. And before I go into it, let's hear from you, Polly. What do you think?
Man, that bass line is doing some really nice things. I do.
That bass line is cool.
I like that bass line a lot. Dope. And it's very prominent in the mix, too. So it's like they clearly knew they had something good going there. I like this song structure. I like the way that it kind of bobs and weaves a bit. And your first time, it's going to catch you off guard a little bit. But the way it kind of shifts into its different parts. Like, I think it's a nice tune. I liked it. It's like the first song that I've enjoyed in a while since Everblue. So, everything's dope. I like this track a lot.
Yeah. Garden?
I dig it. It's okay. You know, it's, I don't know. There's something more, I don't know, catchy and charming about it to me compared to some of the other stuff we've sat through so far.
It runs
through. It's funny that it was written in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
The lyrics were, I think the song itself was, they worked on a little bit harder. It's, I don't know. It kind of has, I remember reading an interview about System of a Down. I can't believe I'm going this way. Where System of a Down's goal was to kind of take prog rock and like squish it down to like 2 to 3 minutes a song. Right.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one of their songwriting goals. And I feel like this song is kind of taking I don't want to say prog, but it's like we're taking a lot of different ideas and we're all kind of looping them and kind of recapturing some sounds that this record has featured before, and we're kind of wrapping things up in a nice way.
Yeah.
And it feels like we're squishing. Like, we're summing it all up into, you know, the track might be a little bit over 4 minutes, but, you know, it has a nice ebb and flow about it where, again, you got the great bass in there. You got some really cool chord changes in there. There's a little breakdown in the bridge that kind of gives me a nice Beatles vibe about it.
Yeah.
And I like that it kind of lets its hair down in the outro. It allows itself to get kind of weird and silly. And where it's kind of revealed at the end, you know, with the audio snippet, that I think they just really enjoyed making this record. And, you know, not just that song. I think they like just had a lot of fun with it. And it's something of a flex. It's not... It does its job, even if it's like kind of the album's a little beat up at this point, of getting things back on track. I think that works for it. And even though it doesn't quite hit the highs, it doesn't quite, I guess what I'm trying to say is recapture that momentum that's kind of died at that point. It's still like, there's still some life here left in it. So. Mm. I think it works pretty well in its place as kind of being the climax and kind of the good, like, we're summing things up for y'all, and, you know, and it's fun. I think it's a fun track, so.
Yeah, like, it's a good track. It's a good song.
Yeah, yeah. And if there's no more takes, we shall then go to our last song.
Go!
What would happen if I flew to San Francisco? Wouldn't make much sense from the outside looking in. Come around again. Only answers, far too many questions. All the things we said, never really put to bed. Coming around again. You know I love you. What am I supposed to do? You're so far away. I stay on track. You're all over the map. Come back to LA.
Here we are. This is it. Final song.
We did it.
Y'all got through a Mandy Moore album.
I can't believe it. I'm alive.
Did you expect something like this would ever happen?
No, like, this never come. Like, I never thought that there would be at any point in my life where I would be listening to a Mandy Moore album voluntarily.
I had a friend tell me, like, you just threw them a nice curveball.
Yeah, it's no kidding.
So here we are. This is our final song called Bug. Now, unfortunately, Bug is not about the classic Dinosaur Jr. album. It's about Ryan Adams.
All right.
Her now ex-husband.
Yeah.
But at the time of recording, would have been her husband to be.
Yeah.
And Bug was her nickname for him.
Mm-hmm.
So before we, I'm going to go a little bit more into that, but before we do, I guess we could talk about the song itself. And I don't think there's really too much to talk about here. You know, Mandy Moore wanted the album to end on something acoustic and simple at the end of the record.
It feels forced.
It does feel like we kind of need to have a, you know, an ending.
How do you feel about
Bug?
I swear to Christ, man, like nothing, everything would have been a great ending. Why did you want to end it on anything else? Like this song just, it feels tacked on.
Yeah.
It's like Lucky Stars from that one Coheed record where it's like, why is this here?
I was about to say that.
Yeah, this doesn't belong here. You just put this here. It's like, it doesn't even work as an end credits. If I'm imagining this album as a movie, it's like, no, this is just, you had a weird artistic vision here and you needed this album to begin and end on an acoustic number. And I think it compromised, like, the actual flow of the record, because I just don't like the song, and two, I just think it's kind of just a bit of a wet, farty ending.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a weak ending. It's another nothing burger of a song. And it's also, as I referenced in Love to Love Me Back, I'm calling it Darker in Hindsight.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And before I get into that, I think my take on the song is very similar to y'all's. If anything, I think I would have, it does a similar thing with Indian Summer, where we're forcing in more things that probably don't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have taken out the backing vocals on this.
Yeah.
I think I would have just left it with Mandy's voice and acoustic guitar and the violin and just
That would have been a perfect arrangement.
Yeah. Instead, we're just adding like vocals and trying to make it bigger than it needs to be.
Yeah.
I will say that you know, in hindsight, if there's any, we call it a nothing song, and yet it's kind of it's also strangely, lyrically, in a way, it's pretty powerful because of what would happen to Mandy Moore.
Obviously, yeah, like it's in hindsight,
yeah, and it makes me sad.
It's awful.
You know,
it's awful.
Because,
absolutely.
Because keep in mind, like this track would have been, again, it was written probably just before they were married.
Yeah.
And already in the lyrics, she is talking about estrangement and how Ryan Adams is being a fucking mess.
Yeah.
And this is before we're married. And, you know, how that marriage does end up preventing Mandy Moore from releasing any more music for over 10 years.
Yeah.
So, because if there's something about this album is like, there's a creative drive in it and there's an excitement and, you know, like you said, Polly, and I agree with, is like an authentic, like she's authentic. She's enjoying doing this. And, you know, even though every song isn't the greatest in the world, what have you, like, I like that. she's so creative. Like, she's just in that creative mode, headspace. Yeah. And like, you really do feel like you get to know her as a person a little bit on this record, right?
Sure. Like, she's very into making this record. Like, you get that from the performances easily.
Yeah. And so she could have continued on. And so I'd like to read is, if it's okay, just a snippet of an article from the New York Times.
Go for it.
And it is centered around Ryan Adams and his sexual harassment allegations. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to give a little bit more light on things. So, again, just the snippet, just the Mandy Moore interview. And so here it is now. So even for an artist like Moore, now a star of the hit series This Is Us, Adams could wield his influence in damaging ways. When they first met in 2007, she was 23, he a decade older. Professionally, Moore was at a turning point. She was exiting her teen pop years, and his reputation as the sensitive, authentic voice provided the artistic credibility she craved. In 2010, Adams offered to work on her next album. When she parted ways with her music manager, Adams discouraged her from working with other producers or managers, she said, effectively leaving him in charge of her music career. So they wrote songs together regularly that Adams promised to record, but never did. He booked time at the studio only to replace her with other female artists.
What?
And he lashed out in ways that Moore came to consider psychologically abusive. Adams lorded his artistic accomplishments over her. She said, he would always tell me, you're not a real musician because you don't play an instrument. Through his lawyer, Adams, let's say this is the Adams side, called Moore's characterization of their time together completely inconsistent with his view of the relationship.
Really?
Adding that he's supportive of her well-deserved professional success. The lawyer said Adams had been happy to help her career, not prevented her from working with others. Again, I'm putting that in there. That's Adam's side of it. But this is the interesting thing. He's like, she released her sixth LP, which is this record we're talking about, completed before their marriage, shortly after they wed in 2009, and has released no album since. This article was back in 2019, by the way.
Oh, gee. Yeah.
His controlling behavior essentially did block my ability to make new connections in the industry during a very pivotal and potentially lucrative time, my entire mid to late 20s, she said. Their divorce was finalized in 2016. Only recently did the women discover that their experiences overlapped. In the last few months, Moore and several others who said they were scarred by their relationships with Adams have found one another, creating a support system. What you experience with him, the treatment, the destructive, manic sort of back and forth behavior feels so exclusive, Moore said. You feel like there's no other people who've been treated this way. Realizing they were not alone, the women chose to speak out about their experiences in the hopes of protecting others and moving forward. I want to make music, Moore said. I'm not going to let Ryan stop me.
That's
the end of the article.
Get him!
You know what's weird is that I was in Asheville, North Carolina, a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. and up on the Cherokee Hurrah Centers, where they have like their big shows and stuff, mm-hmm. They're like displaying Ryan Adams.
And
I'm just like, oh fuck, come on.
Yeah, it fucking sucks.
Yeah, not the best sort of
not the ending you want, really.
Yeah. But I will parting from that, and that's a fucking bummer. There is a happy ending, right? Like, as we mentioned on the previous cast, Mandy Moore does eventually release more music.
Yeah.
And that's in 2020 and 2022. Mm-hmm. I haven't checked them out yet. I feel like after doing this podcast, I'm free to, because I feel like I needed to stick to the rule of being out of my element.
Yeah, right.
So once we're done with that, I'm gonna check them out and I'm gonna see what that's like.
Right.
So
and obviously she would go on, and obviously she would go on to have much more success, you know, with
right. This Is Us.
With This Is Us.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that show was a fairly big deal.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Six seasons on broadcast television is nothing to sneeze at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she did remarry. Let me see here. Yes, she remarried Taylor Goldsmith, who's the frontman of the band Dawes. Anyone familiar with Dawes?
Not particularly.
I've heard that name thrown around before. And she has two children.
There you go. Sounds like things are working out for her, though.
Right, right. So, let's get to our final thoughts of Mandy Moore's Amanda Lee.
Mm.
Let's start with Garden.
I didn't like it. I wouldn't say I hated it, because I could at least make it through a few times.
Mm.
But I definitely, the more I tried to make myself listen to it again in preparation for the podcast, the less I actually wanted to.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was an absolute swing and a miss for me.
That's gonna happen sometimes. You can't really help. Music is subjective. You know, it's just all in. Yeah. You know, you try things on for size and they don't always fit.
Polly, your thoughts?
I like a few songs, and again, like I think that a lot of the arrangement on the album is really good, despite the fact that there are some real cheap sounding elements. That damn harpsichord needs to burn in hell. again, like, she has a very pleasant voice to listen to. She very much, like, has that nailed down. She sings with conviction. I admire that. And, you know, like, hey, like, Everblue and Nothing Everything are great. Everything else, like, I won't be returning to this album, unfortunately, but, I don't think it was a waste of time or anything. It was like, hey, we're trying something on for size, and it didn't really fit for me, but I can still look at it and listen to it and go, yeah, there's things in there, and I get why people would get, because I mean, you read what people are saying about it, you read the comments and the videos, and you look at reviews around the internet, just, you know, while you're doing something like this, to just kind of like, what was the vibe? What did people think? You know, like, once you've kind of settled in your own thoughts, you go look at what other people thought. It's like, well, no, I get why people liked it. Like, they're pretty adamant in finding it to be a powerful album. It's just not one that works well for me. But hey, like, Everblue and Nothing Everything are pretty rad.
Sweet. And look, like, I know picking this album was not going to be y'all's cup of tea.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, you threw that out there. You're like, hey, you take those swings sometimes and just see what you get.
Exactly. And you know, and there's this, like, I have this intentional mischievousness about me, myself, where I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to throw this out and see what happens.
Yeah.
You know? And, you know, and it's also like, this album is not some incredible overlooked masterpiece that's got something to say about the human condition.
No, not at all.
You know, or like, there's some deeply profound connection I have with it. You know,
well, but I mean, relationship with Bryan Adams, of course. I mean,
oh god,
very tumultuous at the time. But,
you know, yeah.
If there's anything that you can relate to.
You know, but I did want to kind of pick something that would just kind of make, you know, make you go like, what?
Yes, definitely.
And I think, like, one of our listeners, Millie.
Yeah.
Hopefully I have this right. I think they were given just a little bit of a reaction to this on the Discord.
Mm-hmm.
I think their reaction was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I am like,
what you're kind expecting. Of,
what you want to go for, especially with this theme, right?
Sure.
So I think Mission in that sense is accomplished.
But sure.
I'm not here to troll y'all either, though.
No. Like, that's always boring when, like, people make streamers play bad games, you know, just to,
right. Yeah, it's like, no, that's not doing that. No.
That's stupid. Like, I'm all for trying things that are outside of my wheelhouse. So, and I know that when it's coming from a good place, you know, it's not just like, oh, you're throwing this at me because you think it's a dog turd too, and you just want me to you want me to do the angry reviewer thing of, oh, I had a thing inflicted on me. I'm so mad.
Yep. Got that early, get that 2000s YouTube video.
Look, I wrote angry reviews on my side and back in the day. I know.
We all did.
Yeah.
That shit was so influential.
Yeah, you know,
and I fucking love the angry game nerd, right?
Who doesn't, right?
You know, like, yeah, that's fun to do that. But the thing is I think it sometimes it just spirals out of control.
It's just boring now. It's just like, no.
Yeah. But again, I do like this album. I think it's authentic. And that shows through. It's sort of the cheap sounds that you get or the occasional overproduction that you get. I think Mandy and Moore and Mike Viola are a good team.
Mm-hmm.
I think they work well with each other. You know, I think there's some gorgeous moments. I do feel moved by Merrimack River or Song About Home or Everblue. And I think there's times it's really fun, like Ferndale, I Can Break Your Heart Any Day of the Week, or Nothing Everything.
Sure.
I find that every song's just got, like you mentioned, probably we're pulling different things around. And so each song has something to offer.
Yeah. Like they're swinging for the fences style wise.
Yeah. And like, you know, altogether, it is kind of a cohesive experience. I think of like the most famous contemporary of Mandy Moore is probably Taylor Swift, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the closest I can think of. And I think I'm about to say something really unfair because I have not listened to every Taylor Swift album. But from the Taylor Swift albums that I have listened to, I, for some reason, this Mandy Moore's work here does appeal to me a little bit more. And I know Taylor Swift is, you know, probably people would say a better songwriter. But there's a sound on this thing that I feel like is a bit unique that I don't really hear that often. And the other appeal of the album, I think, is just the story around it, and it's the potential I hear in it. Like, what if Mandy Moore didn't take Ryan Adams' advice?
Right.
And, like, continue to work on this creative spark in her music career when she was in her mid-20s.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we know she's going to eventually release more music, but, like, she is right to say she missed that time frame when it probably would have benefited her music career the most.
Yeah, like coming out of the whole teen idol thing and then, you know, like completely like that, having that blank spot there of like when you were at your most, you know, marketable is like, you know, when you want to make that jump into something more serious, coming right off of that era and just being deprived of that and kind of being, you know, thrown into relative obscurity and music wise afterwards, it's a bummer.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's like my if I have a deep, profound connection, right, is that this album, where I relate to it also, is like it's a record with optimism. It's a record where an artist, like, I feel like she's in love.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's got this energy of just like you're a young adult and you're making your dreams come true and you're really excited about the future.
Yeah.
But then in hindsight, you're like, life happened. And now adulthood hits. And we now know that it just didn't quite work out the way we thought it would. And
sometimes life is like that enemy in Serious Sam that just runs at you screaming and eventually hits you and blows up.
Exactly.
Scream and all.
So that's it. That's my analysis.
Cool.
You know, I think the only other thing I'd say that I still would like to know the mystery of why the album is hard to get officially.
Yeah, what happened here? It's got to be something.
It's something with the label.
Yeah, it's absolutely something with the label and like where those rights are now, because she obviously does not own the masters to this album. And that's really probably why it's nowhere to be found, is because she does not own this album, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well. I like to thank you both.
Love the state of the music industry, eh?
Hey!
Yeah. Hey.
Not that this is anything new.
No.
It's not. It's not. Thank you all for entertaining me.
Hey,
thank you for listening to my pick. I appreciate it.
Happy to oblige. I will always try something on. I will always try something on for size.
And the garden, it's okay meme that we've created out of this.
Gonna get a t-shirt made of that with gardens image for We Like Bad Music Only and just the bottom big impact text. It's okay.
It's okay. Well, everybody, now that my album pick is done.
Now comes the exciting part.
That's right.
Get to toss the baton to who's playing show and tell next.
You know, we haven't heard Polly talk about an album for a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's her choice. So, Garden, I'm passing the baton to you.
Oh, jeez.
So don't tell us what you're picking, because that's how we start the next run of episodes. But yeah, that's kind of what we're going to do then. We will be back at some point in the future and Garden will reveal their pick.
Yeah, still pondering, so we'll see how I feel when we convene next time.
Gotcha. All right. Well, is that going to do it then?
I'll wrap us up here. Garden, where can the internet find you?
SoundCloud.com/Western Desolation. I put new music up every once in a while, or you can find me in the Discord.
Mm. Ollie, I'm so giddy. I get to ask, where can they find you?
Where can they find me? You can find me at my website, socksmakepeoplesexy.net. You can find me on Twitter and pretty much everywhere at PollyPlushy. And you can find me at twitch.tv/PollyPlushy when I stream and all that fun stuff.
And I am Psychic Heist, and you can find me on the Socks Make People Sexy Discord. And as we say our goodbyes, I would like to quote what John Lennon said at the end of the famous rooftop concert. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we've passed the audition. Listen to more Death Grips.